Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Above Politics Show. I'm Homer Fife.
And I'm Martin Bain, and I hear you've got to talk with Dr. Jerry Patnode today, whose interview is coming up later.
Why, yes, I did, and let me tell you something. The man is passionate, absolutely passionate about politics and people being involved in politics. And you know, when you listen to it, I think one of the things that is going to hit people the most is just that, is him wanting all of us to get involved. He's not taking center stage at all. He's teaching us how to take center stage, how to step up. One of the most fascinating interviews I've done, he talks about political stumps and action committees. And I think that when you listen to the interview, one of the kind of things that stands out the most is he made it a point that if you ever get frustrated and you ever say, well, what is all this any good, take a look at where the latest community organizer is.
Absolutely. So it sounds there might be some parallels between some of the ideas on the AboveTopSecret.com and the deny ignorance, which is something that you and I try and do on a daily basis. And he's clearly saying, you know, deny ignorance, become involved.
I mean, think about it. Our current sitting president, his claim to fame is as a community organizer. I mean, that's what he did. He was basically a nobody in politics, but he became a community organizer. He got people behind him. He got a support group who pushed him and pushed him. And finally, of course, now he's the top man in the entire government. And he came from doing the exact same things that Dr. Patnode talked about.
Exactly. And talking of the new president, I understand that you're stimulus package has gone through, so now of course the U.S. economy should be bounding along.
Yeah. And you know what, Martin, if you believe that, I've got some waterfront property over here in Arizona just waiting for your signature for the title. Let me tell you, this stimulus package is the biggest joke. You brought it to my attention, and I think that the people of Above Top Secret and the people listening to us now need to go to the thread titled Buried in the New Stimulus Package,
Uh-oh, which
is certainly political issues. Have you seen that?
Exactly, and that's by Jipstick, I believe, is the member. It's well flagged. Yeah, it was just interesting because from a UK perspective, we typically don't have this concept of burying maybe small pieces of legislation inside another piece of legislation. Like, you know, some of these things, you know, like detention trustees, military construction, army, national guard, sort of, you know, so large sums of money have been made available, like this one on the National Guard, you know, $150 million for readiness centres built into the bill on the stimulus package to try and energise the American economy. To me, this seems very odd. That I think I can see why this has been done, Homer. This is obviously someone said, well, you put this little bit inside the bill and I'll agree it. I can see why it's been done, but it seems odd that, you know, these little lines get tacked on the end of a fairly major piece of legislation.
Well, you know, Martin, and I think that you have to take everything with a grain of salt, okay? When you're talking about a political system that's as large as ours, if every one of these, and pork is not all bad, first off, let everybody needs to understand that. When people hear the term pork, they automatically think negative, and it's not always that way. When you take a political animal as large as what the United States has become, you cannot feasibly expect Congress, for the House and Senate, to present bills for every little thing that everybody wants, because there's just not enough time in the day to do that. So that's how these things get passed. I mean, exactly what you said. I'll present a bill saying that Homer Fife wants such and such to happen in my state. And in order for me to get that passed, then Martin, who's over here in another state, might say, okay, I'll vote for your bill, but I want you to put in here that you're going to give me a certain amount of this to go to my interests. So it's not all bad until you start tacking on something like 70% of it, and is going nowhere near what it should be going to the stimulus to actually stimulate the economy. Then it starts to be a problem.
I mean, if you sort of read certainly the two examples highlighted here, I mean, you're talking of potentially $250 million.
Yes.
So does that mean the stimulus package is now down to, you know, is down by $250 million, a quarter of $1 billion.
I just think, and I'm looking at some of this too, Martin, and some of it is actually fairly shocking. You've got $50 million that's going to help states comply with a real ID. Now, you know, we're moving closer and closer and closer to federal IDs, and this is nothing more than, and of course it's stuck in such a way that you've got the American people standing around, and you know how I feel about this, with their hands out saying, oh please, Mr. Government, give me my check. I don't care how many of my taxes you take. I don't care if you repeal the Bush tax cuts. As long as you give me my $300 or $400 check, I'll be happy. So they're not looking at all of this stuff on a conspiratorial aspect, and that's how they need to be looking at this.
You're absolutely right. You know, you have to question, is giving, you know, vast parts of certain industries the money going to stimulate the economy? Now, I can see the logic in bringing forward some, you know, federal improvement projects. You know, for example, if you say, right, we want to enhance, maybe put some new dams in for hydropower, or you want to, say, improve the road systems or do stuff like that. You know, you might say, well, we were planning to do this 5 years into the future. Let's bring it forward now. You know, I can see some logic in doing some social infrastructure projects because, A, that employs people and hopefully is also beneficial to the whole country as a whole. Like, for example, in the UK, the government have now said they want to put a third runway in at Heathrow. That's going to take 10 years before it starts construction. I'd turn around and say, well, if it's that important, the government ought to crash it through because it'll create jobs and stimulate the economy, because it's going to cost billions of pounds to do this one. Well, why not get it into the economy now? Why wait?
And in all honesty, there needs to be a third runway at Heathrow. So, you know, I would support that 100%.
And remember, if you want to flame Homer, go ahead. Because that has been quite controversial. But the whole concept of, to my mind, a stimulus package is to find ways to stimulate the economy. And construction, to my mind, is one way to stimulate the economy, because it employs people and it uses, you know, materials and expertise from a huge range of the population.
I agree, Martin. And stimulating the economy is the whole goal. But how much are we stimulating the economy when you look at some of these things that's in the stimulus bill? Look at the $943 million. Now, that's just a tad shy of a billion that's going to beef up FEMA. Now, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Administration, is nothing but a disaster over here anyway. They're supposed to help handle disasters, but they are a disaster themselves. Now, you're talking about beefing up the number of staff available to respond to disasters, and I'm reading right from the thread. So you're talking about, once again, using stimulus money to increase the size of government. I mean, that's all we're doing. And if you read this stuff, that's what it is. We're increasing the size of government. It is another move toward having a larger government and having the population working directly for the government. And that's what this is coming down to.
Yeah, which I suppose, you know, you can always read that into what, you know, people like David Icke have said on this show and what members say on things. You know, how close is this moving to the New World Order that everyone keeps on talking about?
Well, you know, but then again, if you look around at the rest of the world, me and you talked about the situation in France, and you want to give us a little rundown on that, because that's wonderful.
It is. It's Mr. Sarkozy, who's one of the leaders in France, has offered to give some of the automotive companies, Peugeot, Citroën and Renault, state aid, but has clearly said to them, if you take this money or you want this money from the government, you have to make a commitment to us that you're going to shut no French car plants down. And if you have to make job cuts, you have to make it elsewhere. And he is alleged to have said that maybe one of the French automakers ought to shut their plant in the Czech Republic, which is a fellow member of the EU. And now all of a sudden this is all flared up, because clearly you've got the French leader saying to a French automotive company, you want the French state money, you have to shut your plant or potentially shut plants in other EU countries and bring their jobs back to France. Clearly within the EU today we have a policy that says no country can do something that is detrimental to the other and is regarded as protectionism. So that's really interesting, that, you know, maybe some of the ideals that the EU was founded on, and France was one of the founder members of the EU, maybe aren't as important to all the leaders. And, you know, I have to say, I'm hard pressed to disagree with Sarkozy's view here that, you know, you might as well protect and look after your own people first, because he has to be elected. It's like in the UK, it's like in the US. At some stage, all these people have to be elected, and you know, we typically can have long memories when it's important.
Look, I not only don't disagree with Sarkozy, I support him 100%. I mean, when you consider the fact that the auto industry in France is providing jobs for 10% of the French workforce, he has to do something. I mean, they have to step up, and it's kind of like being on the playground, isn't it? I mean, the game is fun until it gets serious, and when it gets serious and it starts to concern you personally, then you have to rally around and protect yourself, and that's all the French people are doing. They're protecting themselves.
Exactly, and we had wildcat strikes, and we're supposed to, just quickly to define a wildcat strike from the UK perspective, is a strike that has not been voted for by the members of a union. So it's a wildcat strike. It has no force in law. In fact, they're still illegal in the United Kingdom. But there is a power station being constructed, and there was a claim that one of the contractors was bringing in people from Europe, other EU countries, to do the job, and was making it impossible for British people to apply for those jobs. All of a sudden, you know, people start going off saying, this is wrong. And I have to say, the British Prime Minister Gordon Brown made a statement some time ago, said British jobs for British workers, and sort of, I think that's a little bit of a millstone around his neck now, because now, you know, there's loads of examples being cited in the media where potentially British people aren't being given the opportunity to go for British jobs. So, you know, I think politicians always have to be careful about what they say. But I've got to agree with you. You know, I think we're in a fairly dire economic times here. How can say the UK, the US and the rest of the G7 actually help the rest of the world when their own countries are in trouble and floundering?
Yeah, you can only go so far as helping other countries. I mean, like you said, when you get to a point where we're at now with the economic crisis that is worldwide, I mean, this is not something that is germane to the United States or to England. This is a worldwide tragedy that's being faced. And, you know, that's one of the great joys that I love about the George Bush bashers, is they're blaming him on all of this. Well, you know, he certainly didn't cause the economic collapse in France, you know, or the economic problems that you're having in England. So, you know, this is something that economic downturns happen. And those of us old enough to have lived through Carter, we remember the exact same thing during the Carter administration. You know, the world was in trouble economically, and we're going to bounce back. But that being said, actions such as what's taken by Sarkozy are necessary in times like this, and the European Union needs to get over itself.
But because France is always seen as one of the bedrocks of the EU, I think that's going to be very hard for, you know, a lot of people to take. And, you know, for Sarkozy to actually turn around and say, I'm more interested in France and protecting French workers than I am in protecting the ideals of the EU, that is really interesting. And, you know, the next, you know, European leaders convention or summit, that's going to be an interesting time. But I suspect if I were to be a gambling man with the very minuscule and small above politics show budget, I would suspect that we may not hear a lot more about this from Sarkozy. I suspect he may have said it, been slapped down by the rest of the EU, and will no doubt nothing will happen. He'll give the money to the French automotive companies. They just will guarantee to shut down no factories in France. That's it. Everything will remain status quo. I just think he chucked a hand grenade, got a bit hurt, and is now probably just going to back off a little bit.
Well, you know, when power talks, people listen, and the European Union is power, so you're probably correct.
Yeah, and you've got to turn around and say, you know, if you look at the size, the economic size of the EU and the economic size of the US, they are comparable these days. You know, you have to think, you know, the economies of both economic units is roughly comparable these days.
Yeah, and you know, the only thing I can say about this is it kind of ties in with the concerns that people on Above Top Secret have as far as a new world order. If the economy gets worse, is that going to spell the end of a new world order? Because as the economy gets worse, what we're seeing here is what we've just talked about: countries that are drawing back within themselves like turtle, and they're putting the shell around themselves, and they're saying, okay, the rest of you world, you guys can go do whatever it is you need to do, but right now I'm going to protect me and my interests.
Exactly, and you know, that's what I think some countries will be doing. And guess what? If you agree with anything Homer and I have said, or hey, for that matter, if you disagree with us, find the show thread, post away. We welcome your views. You can send us emails. You can U2U us. We listen. We do jump in on the threads when we see comments directed at us or comments in general. So that is something we encourage you all to do.
I love going to the show threads, and we're actually getting a lot more people now that are commenting on the show threads, and I think that it carries the conversation into another direction. And I would also like to encourage our listeners, if you post something on the show thread, there's every opportunity we'll talk about it. And, you know, we look at those threads, people, and, you know, you could very well be somebody that we would bring on the show later on if you show us that you're interested.
And as I said, we're coming close to time. There will be no rant from Homer this week, will there?
No, we're giving up the rant because we're talking about things that we think that are of interest here, and I think that if you listen to the show, and also Jerry Patnode, Dr. Jerry Patnode, whose website is the strategiccitizen.com. I keep wanting to put a V on it, but it's not. It's strategiccitizen.com, and his whole concept of being engaged in the political system, and those are his words, and I think they're fantastic, and I think that this is an interview I would like to see everybody listen to. The more people we have in the political system, the better off we're going to be.
Absolutely. Well, with that, I want to thank you for listening. I have been Martin Bain.
And I'm still Homer Fife.
And we'll talk to you next time on the Above Politics Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Above Politics Show. I'm Homer Fife, and sadly missing my partner, Martin Bain. He has real life issues. However, I do have with me here a guest, a Dr. Jerry Patnode, who... he is involved with a website called the Center for Effective Political Advocacy that can be found at strategiccitizen.com. Dr. Patnode, how are you today, sir?
I am terrific. Good to be with you.
And it's fantastic to have you here, sir. And I understand you have a book out.
I do indeed. The current book is The Strategic Citizen. That's why we have the website strategiccitizen.com. Book is primarily a call to action to get people re-engaged in the into the political process. I for a long time have thought that probably the biggest threat to the American way of life is not the terrorist, but the guy I refer to as Joe Sixpack sitting on the sofa, not getting involved or not paying close attention to what's happening to our democracy.
So more a lackadaisical type of attitude is what worries you the more than anything else then?
Well, I'm not sure that it's lackadaisical. I think it's just total disengagement in terms of not really understanding the system, not wanting to take time to understand what's going on within the system. You know, the only time that we're really paying any attention at all might be around election time. But even that, our voting records are showing us that less and less people are involved in that process. Although the last presidential election here certainly was an unusual one in that we had a large number of people vote for the first time. And I actually have a second book coming out in March that's basically saying, okay, now that the election's over, how do we keep actively involved in the political process? And it really doesn't matter what side the fence you're on, whether you're conservative, liberal, libertarian, whatever along the line, active participation is absolutely required from all sides to have dialogue, to have discourse, to keep a close eye on the politicians that if we decide not to pay any attention to them, we'll do damn well what they please, and that's a danger.
Absolutely. Now, listeners, just to give you a little bit of a background, Patnode comes to us here. He had a show on television, a politics television program called Cross Currents, which aired in the Baltimore area. He has been an on-air analyst for both NBC and ABC affiliates in Baltimore and the Baltimore Examiner newspaper. How about a little more about yourself, Dr. Patnode, just for our listeners?
Well, I'm getting to be an old guy. I've been active in the political process, either running political campaigns. I actually foolishly ran for public office a couple of times, and through some dumb luck actually won some elections. And I was a candidate for the U.S. Senate in 1982. Which the wisdom of the people of Maryland decided that I probably didn't belong in that spot and elected somebody else.
Well, that's the way the system works, isn't it?
That's the way it does indeed. And in hindsight, I agreed with their decision.
Okay, now, Dr. Patnode, you said something about the average person just not getting engaged. Now, how do you feel about this Joe the Plumber thing, if I can bring that up? That seems to be a hot topic. It's all over our board of politics.
Well, he was, you know, he was kind of an interesting phenomenon, and I think he was, you know, somewhat of a symbol of the average American that was, you know, the victim of the political process in many ways, and that his views, his concerns, and what he represented really didn't get a whole lot of attention from the politicians. And I think that's why he showed up as being a rather popular character there for a while. And I don't think it was him as an individual. I think it's what he symbolized. And he's actually a perfect example of, you know, why was guys like Joe the Plumber, small business people or people who aspired to own small businesses and things of that nature, you know, why were they constantly passed over in terms of their concerns? Well, they were passed over because they weren't involved. You know, this democracy that we have is really a marvelous thing if you think about it. But it does, in fact, take active participation in the process. This is not a passive kind of government and lifestyle that Americans have developed. It's for activists of all kind. I think part of the problem that we see less people involved in my youth, which it goes back to the 60s. You know, that was a time of the baby boomers coming through great political involvement.
Yes.
You know, the baby boomers brought you know, presidents to their knees. Lyndon Johnson decided he wanted no more of it and left office. You know, they were the influence that you know, forced the resignation of Richard Nixon.
Yep.
And so, you know, they were a very politically active kind of group going through, and of course, when they started to achieve all their things, their children and their grandchildren lived in an era of great affluence, less conflict, and now when we have times where we need to be actively engaged in the process again, our descendants have forgotten how.
I couldn't agree more, and I grew up pretty much in the same. It sounds like we're actually in the same age bracket there. And, you know, what I think what you're talking about kind of brings back to me. Now, here in my state, we have political stumps still where the citizen gets to gather around the politician and actually to use your term, to become engaged. But the problem that I see, Doctor, is that the politicians, and I'll just use President Obama as an example, he comes across initially and starts out as being Joe Citizen from Chicago, a poor guy. You know, but then as he's vetted, we come to find out, of course, he's not. And then when he's elected, he just becomes so far distant from us. I mean, how is the average person not to get discouraged over all of that?
Well, what we have to do, though, is now learn how to build the coalitions and the political presence, if you will, to hold Obama and other politicians to a straight and narrow course of action and to their word. And to make it very difficult for them to stray from that. See, the lack of engagement when we no longer care, it gives them carte blanche to do whatever they want to do. The big part of my book, quite frankly, is that I have several chapters devoted to a theory I developed a number of years back called the theory of shoring up. And what it is is that the process of shoring up, we've all heard politicians shoring up their base. Well, it's a very identifiable and behavioral process that all politicians, in fact, not just politicians, anybody who holds any position of power, must engage in order to stay in power. And so that means they play to the special interest. You know, everybody says, oh, you know, let's not play to the special interest. Can't we just all get along? Well, this is the way the system works. It's all special interest, and we all belong to a special interest group of some sort. You know, most people like to talk about, well, I don't like lobbyists. I would venture to say there's not one American that's not represented somewhere in this country by a lobbyist. You know, if you belong to a chamber of commerce, if you own a business, the chamber of commerce is a huge lobby. If you're a retired person and belong to AARP, it's one of the most powerful lobbies in the country. and so on and so on and so on. If you belong to a trade association or you belong to a union, these are all special interest groups that spend all of their time building coalitions, developing political pressure, promoting and protecting your interest. And it's good that we have them to a certain degree, because most of us wouldn't have any representation at all, because we prefer to sit on the couch and watch television.
Now, Doctor, that being said, let me address the lobbyists and unions here. The
sure.
problem that I see is the lobbyists become so large. I mean, you take a look at the National Education Association or United Auto Workers. Now, they have become so large that they are entities of their own. And
certainly, and they a great deal of political power. And the reason they have political power is their numbers. Hello.
I think you just had a call come in or something. It sounded like.
It wasn't mine.
It could have been me. We're okay.
Okay. It'll go away, whatever side.
You know, that's what makes these shows so interesting, Doctor. It truly does. Now, back to the lobbyists. And I understand what you're saying, but is it not true that they get so large that they stop representing their people? I mean,
it's incumbent upon their membership to, in fact, build their own internal coalitions, build their own ways of looking at their leadership and changing the leadership. I mean, a large trade union or labor union is no different than a political party. In fact, in many ways, they...
Okay, are you still with us?
I am with you, yep.
Okay, we're having these little glitches, and I'm sure, listeners, in case you didn't know, we are doing this across the Internet, so just bear with us.
Okay.
We're going to complete this interview if it's the last thing I do. So what you're saying is that with the unions, just exactly like the politics, if people get engaged, they can change the leadership to more represent what they feel.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, people don't realize how much power they have if they start to organize in any way. You know, I tell people that I'm very big at working with community groups and community associations and building advocacy programs. That's what my consulting practice is all about. You know, I tell people it starts in their own backyard. You know, how many of us really live in areas where you don't even know your next door neighbor, really? I mean, you sort of know them to nod to when you leave in the house in the morning or come home in the evening, but, you know, how many people really engage with them in any kind of conversation or know what's going on in their lives or any of that kind of stuff? And it's amazing that when you start talking to people and talk about your concerns and your fears and your aspirations, and all of a sudden, I feel that same way, and the next guy down the lot feels the same way, and all of a sudden you get five people who feel the same way, that you can start pulling more people together that feel the same way, and lo and behold, you're a political force on a political block that can make things happen.
Exactly, and I could not agree more. The problem is we just don't do it. And now, to me, it seems to be kind of a product of our lifestyle, because the lifestyle here in the United States, right or wrong, is one of I hate to use the word laziness, but basically we are so engaged.
I'm not even sure it's laziness. I mean, our lifestyles, you have hit it right on the head. Our lifestyles have become so complex that you got two people in the household now that seem to have to work. You're always constantly involved in doing other things that kind of get in the way. And then, you know, when you finally get home in the evening, the last thing most of us want to do is get involved in a community meeting or something of that nature. Most of us just want to veg out and, pop open a cold beer and sit down and relax. And I can't blame them. But the price of this freedom and this democracy, demands that we, maybe give it one night a month somewhere.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, Doctor. I can't see how people don't get more frustrated. You take, for instance, and one of the things that's frustrated me is this electing people by name recognition. You take a look at Kennedy, who's been elected time and time and time again, and a man should not be in office, in my opinion. My home state, Strom Thurmond, the man was elected when he couldn't sign his own name.
I was going to say, he was embalmed on the last election, wasn't he?
Well, I mean, it is a fact. I mean, it's a very well-known fact that his entire last term was carried on by his office, that he made no decisions.
Right.
And because he was elected by name recognition. And again, I think it goes back, doesn't it, to what you're saying. People aren't engaged. They're just pulling a lever.
Yeah. I think a lot of that's true. In fact, I've always contended among my students, I irritate them sometimes, is that I told them it's probably a good thing they don't give you a test before you go vote, because most of you wouldn't have an opportunity to vote. They absolutely know nothing about the system or who's running or why or the platforms or anything else.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. You know, you see these different shows. I'm not a huge fan of Sean Hannity, but he does that Man on the Street, and it's shocking how little the average person knows about who's running their lives, you know, politically.
Right.
Now, that being said, I would like to bring up real quick, if it just kind of get a comment from you, how do you feel about this fairness doctrine? Now, we're talking about people being engaged.
It is it is a threat to our very democracy. It is a threat to the freedom to speak. It is a threat to our freedom of thought. And there's nothing fair about fairness doctrine, because what the fairness doctrine used to say, if you go back a few years and really look at what the fairness doctrine was, is that they'll say, oh, we're not limiting speech, we just want something fair and balanced on the other side. Well, the bottom line is that if a radio station can't find a flaming liberal to go with a flaming conservative on the other side, then neither side gets heard.
And isn't that what happened? I mean, isn't that why they repealed
exactly.
it before? Because that's what
exactly.
happened?
Exactly. Well, the power of Ronald Reagan got rid of it, but the bottom line is that they're not trying to open up speech. They're trying to limit all speech against government or the ability to bring people together in force against the existing political structure.
So, and now what scares me about this, getting on with here with the fairness doctrine, is the fact that the FCC, who are non-elected individuals, can bring this thing into effect, and there's nothing that we as average citizens can do about it, because the politicians can say, hey, it wasn't us.
Well, they'll try and hide behind that, but trust me, the Bill O'Reillys, the Rush Limbaughs, the Hannitys, and everybody else that's in this media will raise such a stink that you'll see enough force come forward that I don't believe it will happen, quite frankly. But I think it could happen if we take an attitude that it couldn't happen, I guess. I just think there are enough people have been put on alert. And I do think enough politicians recognize the power of a Limbaugh and a Hannity and an O'Reilly and some of these that they won't let that happen, quite frankly. And I think in all fairness here, I think there's even a large number of Democrats that fall into the blue dog, the conservative Democrat line that would stand fast along with their Republican colleagues to ensure that doesn't happen.
And we all certainly hope so. Now, I'm going to ask you a couple of just kind of round up questions here, Doctor, but I'll tell you what, I know that our listeners are sitting here going, what can we do? Can you just give us a rundown what the average person can do?
Yep.
Just spell it out.
Start talking to your neighbors, number one. and number one, know that you can make a difference. I have thousands of examples of housewives starting off at kitchen tables that bring things like interstate highways to a halt coming through their neighborhoods. You can make a difference. You've got to be willing to challenge authority. You've got to be willing to go to community meetings. You've got to be willing to write to letters to the editor. Use the media. They love controversy, and they will become your allies if you allow them to become your allies. Don't view them as the potential enemy. Even a liberal press will give you coverage if it looks like you're going to be battling the forces in government or any other area, whether it's big corporations or what. So just start talking to people. Start recognizing that you build power by building coalitions. Link up with groups that you might not agree with 100%, but maybe you can get along with 51% of what they're doing, and utilize that 51% and their power and their ability to link up with others, because this is a numbers game. It really is a numbers game. You can't get a politician to react to you unless you can have one or two things happen. You have to be able to go to a politician and say, look, I have the power to keep you in office, and I'm willing to do that if you do my bidding. Or on the other side of that, you know what? I've built a pretty good coalition to knock you out of office unless you start paying attention to me. If you got either one of those things, you'll get your way. And if you can't get either one of those, quite frankly, you are irrelevant.
Now, you know what? That makes all the sense in the world. And you're talking 51%. If we could get people to join.
Well, you don't even need 51%. You need 50% plus one voter on any issue.
Exactly. But that's the problem, isn't it? What I've seen anyway with this election, and particularly with the one prior to that, when George Bush was elected the second time, we see so much a splitting of the country right down the middle. You know, liberal on one side, conservative on the other. Neither willing to give an inch, neither willing to understand.
Well, you raise a great point. I mean, all political battles happen in that middle. You're not going to get somebody from the far left to see it your way, all right? And on the far left, you're not going to get anybody on the far right to see it your way. The battleground is the middle, where they can see common ground. And so the nature of politics is seek common ground. We don't have this concept of can't we all get along. Politics doesn't work unless you have conflict, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really, that's the way the system works. Some people say, oh, I don't want to get involved in that. It's dirty and it's conflict and people arguing. That's how you make progress, quite frankly. You got to have, points of view and people trying to press those points of view. And without that, you become a controlled centrist political state that we used to call communism. You want that conflict. It's healthy. And quite frankly, it's fun.
Yeah,
people shouldn't be turned off by that, and recognize that the battleground is just getting those people that are slightly out of tune with you and convincing them that you have some merit, and vice versa. You got to be willing to recognize that maybe some people that you wouldn't normally link up with might have some things of merit, and you might have to give a little bit so that you can get something a little later down the line.
I think that's fantastic, and also I just would like to point out to our listeners here, we have a president whose claim to fame was as a community organizer, so there's proof.
I'm using him in my classrooms right now, and people say, well, community organizing, that's really hard to do, and where can you go with it? And I point to Barack Obama. I said, you don't have to agree with him politically, but one thing for sure, this man understands how to organize. He understands marketing and communicating, and even if he's from you and I's political perspective, he's not our cup of tea. You have to marvel at what he's accomplished.
And dare I use your term again? He got engaged. I mean, that's really what it boils down to, isn't it? He got engaged.
Yep.
He stayed engaged, and he's managed now to rise to the top.
Yep.
So there is hope out there, I guess, for us. Now, just if you would, we've got a few minutes here. Could you just kind of, you said in the classroom, could you kind of give me just a little bit of a sample of what it is you tell your students, and how you motivate people? I mean, now, I'm kind of a community leader myself, and I know that a lot of our listeners are, because the people that listen to these shows are people who really, I think, want to get engaged, or they wouldn't be listening to the show.
Right.
So how do we get other people, like you said, meet the neighbors and that sort of thing, but how do we get them interested in something?
Well, this whole concept of leadership is one that I teach, quite frankly, there are going to be people who decide that, I want to be involved, and then you sort of have to look around and say, who can lead the charge? A lot of times, we're looking at them in the mirror. You got to be willing to take that first step and say, if nobody else is going to do it, then, I'm going to do it. It's amazing how many people will jump on board if you just give them somebody to follow. And I'm 64 years old. I've been involved in numerous political campaigns, and causes, and, I'm absolutely astounded that, at times when people step up and say, I'm willing to lead the charge, you know, where are my followers? How many people say, you know, I was just looking for somebody to lead the charge. I tell students that, they have a moral responsibility to, be involved, in this great country. I think it gives them so many gifts that they owe some time back. I teach at a college that has a big part of their curriculum of community involvement. We have students that are working in inner city projects, and we have an organization on campus called SIFE, which is Students for Free in Free Enterprise. It's underwritten by Sam Walton Foundation. We spend a great deal of time helping students emerge as leaders, as thinkers, as people who will take risk, and understand that the rewards are great for those who are willing to do that. And that's the motivation for them.
And, of course, the big thing is the young people coming up. You know, I'm 50 years old this year, and, to me, the young people you're talking about, this organization called SIFE, if we can get more young people involved, then the future sure does look a whole lot brighter, doesn't it?
Let me tell you, I am continuously optimistic about the future of this country. I know a lot of people, and a lot of people of my age say, you know, the country's going to hell in a handbasket, and there's many signs that might suggest that that's true. But I can tell you firsthand, in working with college students, and even high school students, on occasion, I speak on college campuses all over the country. I am buoyed up every time I leave or one of those campuses, and saying that the future of America is in great hands.
Outstanding. And, you know, I don't quite have that good a positive outlook, but I am working on it, Doctor, I promise you. Okay, sir, like I said, we are running out of time. However, I would like to hear you tell me about your book, how our listeners can get it.
You can gladly get my book, The Strategic Citizen, at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. In fact, if you just Google the Jerry Patnode or the book Strategic Citizen, you'll probably find hundreds of outlets online, and many bookstores around the country are indeed carrying it, like Borders and Barnes & Noble and as such. So they can certainly do it that way. If they're interested in what I do, please go to my website, thestrategiccitizen.com. They'll get a sense of the kinds of stuff that I get involved in. I think we even have a couple of free giveaways on there. I'll make sure that they're up and running in terms of how to organize and do certain kinds of things if you're so inclined to do so. And you can also buy the book right through the website. If you click on the book page, it takes you right to Amazon.com.
And I will say this. I've been on the website. It is a wealth of information, people. There is a ton of stuff on the website that you can go and look at, and it explains all about this being engaged and what you can do. We have talked about political stumps and action committees and community organizations. And, I guess, Doctor, what we should leave our listeners with here is do something.
Absolutely. Doing something wrong and then fixing it's better than sitting down and not doing anything.
Outstanding. And this is Homer Fife. I'm with the Above Politics Show, and we have had with us Dr. Jerry Patnode, and the website is strategiccitizen.com. And, Doctor, it's good to have you with us. Been really good talking to you.
It's been my pleasure. Hope we can do it again sometime.
Thank you, sir.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.